he's only going to get stronger, and his arm's only going to get stronger. Trevor Lawrence is the guy. I mean, he is the best fit of all the quarterbacks in this class for that offense.
Welcome to Jaguars Reporters, presented by TIAA Bank, with Brian Sexton, John Osher, Ashlyn Sullivan, and J.P. Shepard.
Jaguars Reporters,
presented by TIAA Bank, starts right now.
Welcome into this edition of Jaguars Reporters. Brian Sexton, along with Ashlyn Sullivan, John Osher, and J.P. Shadrick, here on a February day as we're getting close to things really starting to heat up. Hi, everybody. It's been a busy couple of days since we last talked, and the thing that stands out the most to me is that the Jaguars are in the driver's seat. And people are paying attention to them. I mean, this franchise is relevant again. And I think it's surprising because when you're 1-15, you generally fall off the face of the earth. But this team and the position they're in now, people are interested. They're talking about us.
Well, yeah, in both ways, right? I mean, there was some positive news and some not so positive news, considering on which sources you listen to over the weekend. And that's the way it goes when it's a big time NFL team that has the number one pick and a big name head coach, and they go to the pro day of Trevor Lawrence. That's the good. And then the Chris Doyle aftermath and fallout is the not so good, obviously. That all comes with the territory, I think. And hey, now it's time to move forward, I think, after everything that happened this past weekend.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a problem. I've gotten some emails from people asking, well, you know, was the Doyle thing, you know, unrecoverable? You know, I don't see it that way. I think they'll, you know, all of the momentum, the number one pick, the coaching staff, the free agents, you know, I don't think the momentum going forward for this franchise has changed with any significance. I'm not sure how you guys feel about that.
Look, they had to know when they hired him that there was going to be a conversation, that they weren't, you can't cover that kind of stuff up. And it came out immediately. And that they changed tack on that shows that they decided to listen. You know, I mean, I think it'll move on quickly because people will say, oh, you know, I mean, stubbed your toe, let's go. And I don't know that we'll talk about this much longer because overwhelming Trevor Lawrence story, you know, free agency is going to open and it'll be overwhelming cap space. Ashton, I just think we'll get past this one quickly.
I do too. I think the statement speaks for itself, and it was a weekend where there was negative and positive news, like JP said, and I think the backlash, especially on social media and from the people that have been emailing and sending in notes to the Jaguars, they easily could have said, you know what, this is the hire, and it's already been made, and this is the way it's going to be, but that's not the case. So I think there has been positive change, and they listened to what fans want, and now we can move forward.
All right, let's get started on this Jaguars Reporters podcast with our Jaguars This Week segment. And we'll start on the offensive side where Jane Slater, who was at Clemson for the workout, asked Urban Meyer about the progress he's seeing from his offense in the early stages of his tenure here.
Oh, it's all I think about 24/7. And this is a transformative decision for the Jaguars. This is, we all know that it's a quarterback sport. And obviously in the NFL. But it's also, when I was talking, our offensive line's pretty good. You know, it's not a blow-up offensive line. You know, we got some other areas we got to fix. So I have a vision of what it looks like. Coach Schottenheimer and Bevel, we've had those conversations. But it's going to be built around what we have. And there's some good pieces there, but we got to make it even better.
Well, we're all excited to see it, too. When you bring together names like Meyer and Bevel and Schottenheimer and start thinking about how Trevor Lawrence fits into that or how some of the other offensive weapons they can add in free agency fit into that. It's pretty exciting to be a Jaguars fan right now.
Yeah, and at some point in the next week or so or whatever the time frame is, I think all of us, one of us will talk to Daryl Bevel and some of the assistant coaches. And I'm anxious to talk to Bevel about how he sees the offense because I'm not sure that this is a case where you can, you know, the thing that all reporters do and all media do, when a coordinator gets hired, you go back and look what he's done before. Well, I'm not sure in this case that necessarily going back and seeing what Bevel has done before is going to give you a great blueprint for what he's going to do now, because they both said last week it's going to be adapting to what Urban Meyer wants to do. And I think what we may not know until OTAs or even preseason games is exactly how that's going to look. Urban Meyer has not necessarily had the same offense at every stop in college. We all sort of know some of the basics, but he changed a lot from Ohio State to Florida. He changed a lot when he had a different quarterback at Ohio State. So how this scheme is going to look, I think, is very much TBD.
I think that applies to offense and defense. The hard thing I have is that both coordinators have been saying that it all depends on the personnel and what players you have. And with 11 draft picks and over $73 million in cap space and free agency, we have no idea what this roster is going to look like and who they're going to keep. So it's difficult right now to say what either side of the ball is going to look like when it's so based on players and you don't know what half this team is right now.
It's a miracle, John. They love the offensive line, it sounds like, still. Urban Meyer said that the other day. It's not a blow-up offensive line. You've been saying it in your Ozone almost every day.
Well, Jay Gruden said it last summer. Right? Yeah, Jay Gruden, JP, said it last summer. He said this offensive line, and then, of course, we talked about it all season long. And then when Urban Meyer comes out and says it, all of a sudden people go, oh, maybe it's not.
Right.
You know what? It might be okay. Breaking news.
Well, enough to get them started. You know, I think that in time they're going to have to do their own deal and figure out some things with money in the interior. A lot of money going out there. They got to work out, figure out what they're doing at left tackle. But I think to get them started, there have been worse offensive lines to start programs.
We've got a lot of time to talk about this. Go ahead, John.
The ultimate clue on that was they kept Warhawk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think you necessarily keep the offensive line coach if you look at it and say the group was a disaster. I know there's a difference between players and coach, you know, but it all to me goes to they look at this, they see Warhop, they see a functioning offensive line, and I think there is a school of thought is, do we want to blow this up if we've got a functioning unit when we've got potentially a rookie quarterback coming in? You know, I think it all points to they like the continuity and they feel safe for the most part, putting a rookie quarterback behind this group and this coach.
You're also talking about an offensive line that paved the way for an undrafted rookie free agent to run for 1,000 yards when everyone knew that if you stopped James Robinson, you essentially stopped the Jaguars in 2020. Mm-hmm. So the offensive line was more than fine. Hey, let's move on to the defense. This is the other question that comes up whenever you have a coaching change or a coordinator change, especially when you're talking about defense. Coach, what scheme are you going to run? Is it going to be a 3-4 or a 4-3? Joe Cullen met the media for the first time as the Jaguars defensive coordinator last week and weighed in with the answer.
Well, we're still evaluating, you know, our current roster. And, you know, I've been involved with in 14 years, 8 years in a 4-3 scheme where we were multiple, and 6 years in a 3-4 scheme where we were multiple. And it's all tailored to the personnel that you have. And I think in both schemes, you know, you have flexibility to do both.
Now, it's interesting, guys, because Joe has run both systems. And, of course, every team runs a variant of both systems. It's, you know, when you put the linebacker on the strong side up on the line of scrimmage, and you've got four men there. The one thing you know you have is you've got some rush backers, guys who can play Caleb on Chaisson and Josh Allen, who can work from a 3-4 or work from a 4-3. The other side of the 4-3 or the 3-4 thing is you've got to have inside linebackers. You've got that. Miles Jack and Joe Schobert are two guys who can fill those roles inside. If you wanted to lean more towards a 3-4, you just have to go get a big nose tackle.
Yeah, and my guess is they're going to lean toward a 3-4. I guess my ultimate thing on this is always, you know, there has been such – in the Ozone mailbox, there has been question after question after question about the 3-4. And it's like, you know – the wizard came out from behind the curtain and handed Dorothy a 3-4, and all of a sudden you've got a magic defense that's that's the end all. If you've got really good players in a 4-3, you know what happens? You wind up being second in the NFL in total defense in 2017, and you almost go to the Super Bowl. If you've got players who aren't that good and aren't playing fast, you're not very good. Basically the same thing's true of a 3-4, guys. If you've got good players in it and they're playing hard and they're playing fast, I know that's Urban's big thing on defense, play fast. If you've got good players doing that, you're going to be okay if you run a 1-6.
Right. Like Joe Cullen said the other day, right? I mean, it's Yeah, we have history in both, but it's so early in his tenure, right? He's only a few weeks into the role. They haven't figured out what they're doing in free agency and all that stuff yet. You know what they are? They're multiple. That's what he said. Oh, yeah, we can do all this stuff. They're going to switch it around.
The league's multiple now.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
They all run everything.
I caught myself bummed out. I was tweeting. I was like, he's not going to give us an answer. And then I thought to myself, why would he give us an answer?
Right.
It's February, Schlynn. Chill out. You don't even know what players you have. Why is he going to say it right now?
Yeah, well, some of the old salts, you know, we remember the 3-4 when there weren't many teams that ran it. You know, there weren't even multiple defenses. You know, back in the early days of the Jaguars, and John, you recall this, you were either 4-3 or 3-4. There weren't right. these hybrid sorts of schemes. And Pittsburgh, of course, was the model of that, you know, with Greg Lloyd and Kevin Green and Chad Brown. And everybody wanted to be like Pittsburgh. But to your point, it doesn't matter the scheme. You want Pittsburgh's players. You wanted those guys. If you could roll Jason Gildon in off the bench, you were in great shape. So who's your Jason Gildon, your Greg Lloyd? To the point, the Jaguars have a nice stable of young guys that look like they can fit that if that's what they choose to do on the defensive side of the football coming up this fall. All right, on to hear from Trevor Lawrence, who obviously was the star of the show, and he didn't need to do this. I mean, he could have just said, I'm going to have shoulder surgery. You all have a couple of years of tape. I'm a 3-year starter. I've won a national championship. You know, you'll see me when I get there. But he didn't. And his answer was telling, not of the character of person he is, but the kind of leader he is, I thought. And that's really, when you're going with the number one overall quarterback and you're going to pay him the kind of money and invest in him, you need this kind of a leader.
Yeah, like I was just telling someone, just wanted to be like everybody else, you know, go through this process the right way, and just felt like this was important for me to do, give all the teams a chance to see me throw, and something that, you know, growing up, you kind of dream about having your pro day and everything's going normal. Then, like I said over there, life happens sometimes and things get switched up. So just showing that I can adapt and adjust, prepare short notice, and still, you know, put on a pretty good day. You know, obviously, how these things go, you wish you had a few throws back, but overall, I thought it was a good day. But yeah, I just wanted to do the process the right way. And I thought that was important for us to still throw and to do that.
Guys, I mean, you don't have to study leadership. I do, but you don't have to understand that what you want in a leader is someone who will get down and dirty with the people who are following him, who will do it, who will show them how to do it, and then keep doing it. That is true leadership. And this guy looks like, I mean, that's what makes him great, is that he's not only a phenomenal physical specimen, but a guy with all the intangibles you could possibly want.
Yeah, and I thought it was intriguing. Jane Slater also reported that, I don't know if it was Urban's idea for the pro day to take place, but he spoke to Lawrence beforehand about it. And in Urban's quote about the process, he basically was talking to Lawrence. They found out about the labrum, and Urban sort of said, well, you could either not have it, you could delay it. And one of the things that Urban said, that Trevor said, was, well, I'm not going to throw. And the story went, he just kind of picked up the football, went out and threw. Most of these guys trained for 2 months for this event. Lawrence sort of did it as close as you can to being unprepared for one of these things. He just went out and threw. And Urban sounded very impressed that he was willing to do that, confident, loves going out there, knows it was important, and isn't really worried that he may not quite look great on this one play. Everything that Urban was quoted as saying about Trevor on this, it certainly sounds like he loves the kid's makeup. And I thought that was probably the most significant part of Friday.
I think it was a big passing of a test to see, you know what, I will go compete anytime, anywhere, right? I mean, if it was Urban saying that to him, I don't know if it was Urban like testing him, like in that, you know, straightforward of a manner. But
sure.
Hey, he might have passed the test. Okay. And guess what? The judge of that test is standing 10 yards in front of you the entire drill on the field. I think that was a message from Urban Meyer as well. That wasn't just by accident. He was standing in the middle of the field the entire practice while the entire NFL is on the sideline, out of the way. Thanks for coming. Enjoy the SO Club. Take your private jet back home. This guy's coming to Jacksonville. That's my opinion. But I think it was Urban testing him to see if he would just step up and, yeah, why not throw 40 times? Who knows? Who cares who the receivers are? I don't know who these guys are. There's like two or three guys there. On a normal pro day, there's eight, nine different – there's a bunch of different guys available. Hey, who's on campus today? Who wants to run some routes for me? I'm going to get it to you. Catch as many as you can. And that's what they did. And I think he passed that initial test with flying colors.
Yeah, he was saying on ESPN, the broadcast, they interviewed him after the pro day, and he was saying, normally you would have 7 to 8 weeks to prepare for this, and you would know who your receivers are, you would know what day it is. He said he only had 2 weeks to prepare for this pro day, but he wanted to be like everyone else. Just overall, incredibly confident in your ability. It doesn't matter what day I do it, I'm going to get it done. And the message that stood out to me is what JP said, where Urban Meyer was standing at the depth of where a linebacker, maybe even a defensive tackle, would be, and that was, y'all can take a look, but this is mine. Have fun. Have fun taking a look, but you can't have it. Ha ha.
All right. And that's Jaguars this week. And as we roll along here on the Jaguars Reporters podcast, Ryan Sexton, Ashlyn Sullivan, JP Shadrick, and John Osier, we come to a segment we call Big Things, where everybody throws a topic out there and we comment on some of the bigger things around the Jaguars and the NFL. And John, we'll start with you. And you're talking about the second-year cornerback to be C.J. Henderson.
Yeah, and I don't know how popular it was. We probably could have chosen this topic at any point this offseason. But my point was C.J. Henderson, I think, may be the most important young unknown on this team. He might be the most important player to see how he is next season. Because if he's good, if the second-year cornerback plays like a top-10 pick, then all of a sudden, I think you've got something to build around in the secondary. You've got your cornerstone piece of the secondary, and you can fill in around that. If he's not a top 10 pick, now you're looking at rebuilding the whole thing. And that means draft capital. That means uncertainty. That means spending free agent dollars. I'm confident that Josh Allen's going to be good. I'm confident that Juwan Taylor, James Robinson, DJ Chark, Miles Jack. I think they've got pieces at every other level of their team. Trevor Lawrence. I don't know about the secondary because I haven't seen enough of CJ to know what he is. So to me, if he's top 10 corner guy, top 10 corner is supposed to be all pro. If he's that, then I think they're in really good shape with their roster. If he's not, I wonder about the secondary.
Very fair. We have no idea what he is like. His best game was his first game. And then after that, you really have a lot of question marks around him, but you saw him in training camp and you saw great things, but you need to see a lot more out of him to solidify and be confident that he is a piece you can build around.
If he's that player he was in week one, then yeah, he's a Pro Bowl type player. Let's just get through the season with him. Like get through 16 or 14, like get through the bulk of a season first. He was not able to do that. And can he carry that load first and then see what kind of performance he can have on top of that?
You know, I also think it's worth noting, they really have built a strong defensive staff. All the conversation goes to Charlie Strong, the assistant head coach, and to Joe Cullen. But they brought in Bob Sutton, a longtime defensive coordinator in the NFL, most recently with Andy Reid as a coordinator in Kansas City, has been a head coach on the college level. Bob is well-known for his understanding and his knowledge of coverage schemes. So now you talk about a coach that's working hand in hand with the rest of the staff, and it's a good staff. It gives a young guy like C.J. Henderson a real chance to have a guy like Bob Sutton, who is trying to work and devise the defense around him. All right, big thing number two, Ashlyn, you're talking about offensive tackle. We were just mentioning earlier, you know, the offensive line looks like it's a solid group. It's not a blow-up group, in the words of the head coach. You've got a thought.
Yes, I'm going to throw some drama into it. Why not? Ravens, offensive tackle, was left tackle, was right tackle. Orlando Brown wants to be traded from Baltimore, and he only wants to go to a team that will play him at left tackle. He went in for an injury, played well, but Baltimore said, all right, our guy's back, so you're going to go back to right tackle. He said, no, I want to be traded. And I respect this decision because the difference – for left tackle to right tackle, salary-wise, is huge. The highest paid left tackle, it's a $5 million a year difference when you go to right tackle in a way that you don't want to go subtracting. So I get why he wants to do this. And I think the Jaguars should look at it. I think you have to first figure out what you want to do with Cam Robinson. But this is intriguing because this is a player that went into left tackle and made some noise and has some versatility there, also being able to play right tackle. So I think you look at it. Why not? But first you have to figure out what you want to do with the guy that's there.
Well, can the crotchety old man go first?
Here you go.
I'm so tired of the forcing out after players sign a contract. And I'm not saying that none of these players ever have gripes, but I'm just tired. You know, the old man is tired of the headlines along these lines. I get what it is. I'm all for paying players. I think players should make every drop of money that they possibly can. But I am tired of the forcing out story that is increasingly a thing in the NFL. I also wonder, I know this guy played well at left tackle in the Ravens scheme. I'll defer to Bucky Brooks, who told JP and I this on a podcast a couple weeks ago. The Ravens scheme is different than a lot of offensive schemes. It's run-centric. It's not drop, seven-step drop, protect all the time. You know, is he a left tackle, elite money left tackle was Bucky's point. Is he top of the line, which you're going to have to pay and give up draft capital to get him? That would be the concern you would have going after Orlando Brown. And how does Warhop, how do these guys feel about Cam? I think that's the big unanswered question that I'll talk about later in the show.
Yeah, I mean, the Jaguars and everybody around the organization need to take control of this offseason, own this offseason. Now, we've won some offseasons in the past around here. I get that. But this is going to be unlike any offseason we've had, at least since we've covered the team, with the new head coach and the staff coming in, the number one overall pick, another first-rounder. That's a lot going on in this offseason and all the free agent money to go with it. So think big, ride the wave. No idea, name, or salary should be out of bounds. If you think Orlando Brown's the guy, okay, well, you've got the money to go do it and go make that decision. And as a fan, as a supporter, I'm not going to tell you how to think, but no idea is too crazy. If all of a sudden you think that – this is not what I think, but if all of a sudden you think Deshaun Watson's the answer, this would be the offseason to go get the guy like that. You know, it may not be the right answer, but just think big. Let the decision makers make those decisions the right way. Nothing is out of bounds this year. And for the record – I also am going to force myself out and play left tackle. I'm playing left tackle.
Well, you'd make $5 million more dollars a year. So I'm the young millennial, and I say, go get your money. Take that, John, old man.
Get off my lawn, Schlin.
All right. Strong point. And, you know, for Meyer, who talked about, JP, the perfect situation to bring him back into coaching, yep, that's it. I mean, you've got an owner who's naturally predisposed – to being aggressive. He likes to make a splash, and not just a splash, but the largest video boards in the world, and not just a hotel, but the Four Seasons, right? So in anything that he does, he wants to go big. So you got the first pick and all the draft count, everything we've talked about. So I have every sense that's what they're going to do. You know, it used to be you talked about, you know, guarding the cap and the draft picks and the resources, and you know, you'd go from 1-15 to, you know, 5-10, 5-11, 6-10. And then the next year, you know, you'd make your playoff run. You build it slowly. I don't see the sense that they're looking at it in the old paradigm anymore.
They can win. I think they think they can win faster than a lot of people think they can win.
And in today's NFL, with all the methods that are available to you, why not think that way, I suppose?
Because you better win in the years that you have, because you might not have many years after that. That's the way it works here. So yeah, why not win this in 2021? It'll be tougher then, but why not then? Why waste a year building to 2022? Do all you can to try to get it right now.
John, when we first got started with this thing, Tom Coughlin always used to talk about, and he was never a patient coach, but understanding the stages of building a thing, you know, 4-12, 7-9, 10-6, right? And you had to be patient and understand the curve for a football team. And what JP's essentially saying, and we've seen, if you have the right quarterback, you can flatten the curve.
Yeah, I'm not anticipating that, because I think there are things depth-wise, and I think some of what Urban is teaching will automatically take time because it's going to be a culture change. But if it all clicks, then there's no reason you can't get a lot better really fast, because you should have a much higher level from the main position, which is quarterback. So that's going to get you a long way.
All right. Here's my big thing. I'll throw it at you real quick. And John, it kind of plays into what you were talking about. Someone has to say no to the Deshaun Watsons and last week, the Russell Wilson thing. You know, when a quarterback signs that massive contract, and what did he get? 4 years, $150 million. You're not just the quarterback. You're the cornerstone. And you're getting a level of financial security that very, very few human beings ever get. The trade-off there is that the team can build around you. They're getting quarterback security. You're getting financial security. You can't just take your ball and go home when you decide you don't like things. You can't have it both ways. You can't have both professional flexibility and financial security if you're a quarterback. Now, the Orlando Brown thing is kind of like the Jalen Ramsey thing. Those positions are important. They're two of the five premium positions, but not like quarterback. And I didn't like it. Watson's young. His agent's David Mogetta. We know what Mogetta's game plan is. He tries to force the issue, and it worked with Jalen, so why wouldn't he think he could try the same thing with a franchise that's in disarray? But it's not the same thing for the quarterback. It's just not. And it's not good for the league to have these franchise quarterbacks hopscotching around. You want franchise stability. You want every franchise to find their quarterback, have their guy, and be able to compete week in and week out. You don't want Russell Wilson playing in LA 1 year and 2 years later playing in Washington. You want Russell Wilson playing for the Seattle Seahawks. I get a guy like Tom Brady at the end of his career, but for the main years of his career, you want Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. You don't want him shifting and going to Houston. So it's better for the league. It's better for the franchises. And financially, it's better for the players to just dig in a little bit and understand you're part of the program now. You're not just the quarterback.
Spoken like a true old man.
Get off Brian's lawn. Get off
but
Brian's
lawn. But you don't agree that that's,
I believe, yeah.
That's
I
so critical.
Yep.
You know, you're going to build and you're going to go draft and spend free agent dollars around these guys. You can't have those guys. I can handle it from some of the others, though. I didn't like the way Jalen did it. But those quarterbacks, you got to stay put. You got to understand the game the way that it's played in the boardroom. And by the way, the trade-off there is if you're going to do that, maybe you say to Deshaun, hey, come here real quick. What do you like? What did you like about Bill O'Brien? What didn't you like about it? What do you like about the kind of head coach? I mean, what would work for this team? You have your thumb on the heartbeat of the team. You know, take a little bit of input. You're not going to make the decision. We're not promising you who we're going to get, but we'll listen to you because you're like a coach in the sense that you're very, very important. I might do a little bit more of that. Again, not making the decision, but tell us what you want.
I hope that's going on because it seems like there is a lot of disarray there, hence why he wants to leave. So hopefully for his sake, those conversations are being had.
I actually prefer Houston struggling. I'm good with that.
Yeah. I appreciate it. Embrace the petty. Right, JP?
They've been doing it to us for a long time. Guess what? It's a two-way street now.
Yeah. Well, and we could talk about this ad nauseum, but if the Colts don't find a quarterback, they might struggle a bit too. There might be an opening here in this AFC South. But let's go on to Everyone Asks, which, you know, formerly and in Drive Time is known as Ashlyn Asks. But in this way, we bring a question. This week, Ashlyn is putting her 30-second timer on it. I'll start it out. Okay. And it's, should the Jaguars just get on with it and say, we are taking Trevor Lawrence, because the team with the number one pick can go ahead and make the pick now and negotiate now. We saw it in 2006 when Mario Williams and the running back from USC, Reggie Bush. I can't think of his name. Reggie Bush, right? They were negotiating with both of them, and they got a contract deal done. They said, all right, well, we're taking Mario Williams, the pass rusher from North Carolina State. So should the Jaguars just send a press release now? Jaguars announced on April 29th they will take Trevor Lawrence and just get rid of all the drama. 30 seconds, JP, go for it.
No, not right now. They should go through the due diligence of the other top quarterbacks. Go to the Ohio State Pro Day. Look at Justin Fields. Go to BYU if you want for the heck of it. Look at Zach Wilson. Then after that, say, we're taking Trevor Lawrence. But no, they should not do it right now.
John, didn't they essentially do that when Urban Meyer told James Slater that he was on the phone and told Trevor how he should do his pro day?
You would think. Does this count for my 30 seconds?
It does. Hurry up.
Okay. You would think it does, although what I don't know, was there a FaceTime call where they looped Justin Fields in? I don't know. You know, so maybe they were all talking. So who knows? I don't think they should yet. I think they should wait until they look at the two pro days of the other quarterbacks they're looking for. And I think that's what they will do, because in the NFL, you don't do anything until you have to.
Urban Meyer had his keys in his hand. He was on the starting line with his brand new race car, Trevor Lawrence, last week. Should they just go ahead and start the engine and let everybody know this is their car?
It was a test drive, but no, because they don't have to. They don't care what we think. They don't care what America thinks. They're going to do it the way they want to do it. And like John said, they don't have to. And I guarantee that they're going to be at Ohio State's pro day, and Urban Meyer will be standing where he was standing for Trevor Lawrence just to throw some drama into the mix. And then we're all going to come back on this podcast and say, why was he standing so close? And just to have some fun with it, he's not going to do that.
All right, there's my question. JP, you're up next.
Ashlyn wins, by the way, because that's the most accurate statement we've heard in all these podcasts we've done. They don't care what we think. They don't care what America thinks. They're going to do what they want to do and how they want to do it. I like that.
You know,
spot on.
Before you go to your question, the reason why I would do it is because I would have fun with it, right? And I'd want, look, if I can do that, if I'm telling the world, all right, here's our playbook, Trev. Here's what we're working on for you, right? Oh, by the way, send the owner's plane and let's go to Greece and hang out on the boat for a couple of days and get to know each other a little bit, you know? I mean, I'd start engaging in that relationship right away and letting it be known. Hey, everyone else, you can start working on number two. Number one is here. I'd want my mindset, my staff's mindset, and the quarterback's mindset all to be on Jacksonville. I think there's value in that, but I understand why you all wouldn't. Okay, JP, you're up next.
Here's mine. It's college heavy. After Clemson put out all those deep ball highlights the other day on social media, and then we saw Trevor Lawrence do his thing in his personal pro day, what is the best play or player or combo of both that you saw in college football this year? Ashlyn, start us off.
You're going to be so surprised. I'm going Kyle Pitts, tight end. Florida, uncoverable. This is a mismatch nightmare. Zero drops on 65 targets. You're going to have to trade up to go get him. Daniel Jeremiah has him mock draft right now, 12 to the Niners. But this tight end position has been such a disarray for so many years. Go get a guy that has proven to do it at the college level. Trade up for him. You got 11 picks. Make it happen.
He can line up anywhere. I like it. John, what do you got?
Well, I guess I've got to go with anybody from Alabama because they had all the good players this year. You know, the wide receiver, Devontae Smith, I mean, was unbelievable in the times I saw him. I don't follow the college game incredibly closely where I don't watch 100 programs. But to me, his play in the national championship game was like a video game. I've never seen anything like it. I don't quite know how that translates to the NFL. I think there's a couple of receivers who were probably translate over him, but he was awfully good.
30 seconds. Brian, what do you got?
Well, I was going to go Devontae Smith because anytime I saw him on the field, I thought I was watching Marvin Harrison. You know, I mean, the slender receiver that no one could cover. And Pitts is a good call. Trevor Lawrence, I mean, anytime he had the ball in his hands, I wanted to see it. I'll go with the running back from Notre Dame just to be different. And I don't think he's coming out to be a pro this year, but what do you think was a sophomore? I thought he was really interesting, you know, about a 5'11 guy, 210 pounds. I just remember thinking, you know, this is a guy with a great nose for the ball.
So. That's it. Your time's up. The correct answer is Najee Harris, Alabama running back, who put together 1,400 yards, 26 rushing touchdowns this year, four more through the air. But the most exciting play was in the semifinal game against Notre Dame when he hurtled over the man and then ran for another 30 yards down the field. He's hurtled over guys before, but that one just blew my mind. That was the play of the year, in my opinion, in college football.
That was a great play.
It told you everything that you needed to know about what Alabama had done that year.
Fair enough.
All right, Ashlyn, how about you?
All right, here's something for you. We were talking about defensive alignments. What are they going to run? 3-4, 4-3. How will Joe Schobert adapt if it is a 3-4? Because fun fact, he's never played in that system before. He played in a 4-2-5 in Cleveland. Joe Schobert, big free agent last year. How will he adapt if they do end up changing it? John.
I think he'll be fine. I don't know that he's an ideal 3-4 inside linebacker. But I think if you're playing it, it'll be he and Miles Jack inside. And I think he'll be fine. I think overall you would love to have a touch more stoutness in there. 3-4 inside is a little less side to side, and you don't have to have quite the unbelievable sideline mobility to mobility. So I think he'd be okay. I don't know if he'd be ideal, but he'd play well in it.
Brian, same page?
I think it depends on who the nose tackle is. If the nose tackle can eat up one of the guards and give him room to run, I think for the very same reason. My favorite 3-4 linebacker was LeVon Kirkland. He was 275 pounds, right? Him going forward, taking on a guard, was a fair fight. I don't think either one of these guys are necessarily big enough to take on guards and jam things in the hole. So I think both of them are a little bit miscast as the true Mike. Shaq Quarterman's the guy on the roster that looks like a true inside linebacker. They're both capable guys. I think they'd be good.
So for me, I think a lot of it, depends on the money they've paid him. Guess what? He's going to be on the field because of the money going out to him. 3-4, 4-3, 5-2, whatever alignment you want to put out there, they will find a role for Joe Schobert, and he will go play, and he'll make some plays like he did last season. He was an effective football player for a defense that struggled last year, let's say that. But he'll be on the field. 3-4, 4-3, they'll find a place for him. How he adapts to the 3-4, go play.
All right. That brings us to you, John. You're last up with Everyone Asks.
Well, I tried to make it timely. They hired coaches last week. So my question is, what question would you like most to ask an assistant coach when we start talking to them? Mine was, I want to ask Warhop about Cam Robinson and get a real answer just to see what that's going. But we won't talk about that one. JP, what question do you want to ask an assistant?
I want to ask Brian Schottenheimer what exactly a passing game coordinator does that would be different from the offensive coordinator. And I'm not being snide about that. I'm just curious. It's a fairly new phenomenon in football to have a passing game coordinator. It feels like a quarterback coach to me, but he has a coordinator title. He and Bevel will be involved. How do you guys work together on a day-to-day basis to get things right for the quarterback room? That would be my question.
Schlynn.
I want to ask Daryl Bevel, and I wanted to ask this in the press conference. My little hand was up on the Zoom call, and they didn't pick on me. How does he feel about his wide receivers? Does he feel like he has a true number one wide receiver in DJ Chark, or does he feel like he has a number of wide receivers? If he doesn't have a number one, does he feel like he needs to go get one in free agency? Is he the type of guy that likes a lot of contribution from multiple players, or does he want that true number one Julio Jones type of guy? That's what I want to know.
And Brian.
I'll go with Bob Sutton. I want to talk about the secondary. In particular, I want to talk about safety, and I want to know about Daniel Thomas. Now, he didn't get to see a lot of last year's sixth-round pick, but I, as you know, was very impressed in the 4 or 5 games that we got to see him. So I'd like to have a broad conversation about how he's going to use the safety position. Because, look, we all know with mobile quarterbacks in this day and age, you need a safety who can run sideline to sideline. They're the X factor in stopping someone like a Lamar Jackson. So how do you use it, and what do you think about Daniel Thomas? And that wraps up Everyone Asks. You like the 30 seconds, Schlynn, or you think it should be more like 45?
Or nope, 30. Let's keep it timely, fellas.
All right, we're just about done with this edition of the Jaguars Reporters. One thing left to do, and that is hear from someone that one of us talk to every week. We call it Did You Hear This? I got the chance to run down a guy that you all know pretty well, Matt Miller, who used to be with Bleacher Report, now is the Draft Scout, his own website. And we talked about Trevor Lawrence and his evaluation, not just of Lawrence, but Meyer, because he watches a lot of college tape. How do you think the whole thing with Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence is going to blend together?
He's the best quarterback I've ever evaluated, and it's just that simple, Brian. It really is. And, you know, I say that and people think that, oh, that means he's going to be better than Patrick Mahomes in the NFL. It doesn't quite mean that. It's more so that when evaluating a player, you look at basically what they can do and then what question marks you might have about them. And so with Trevor Lawrence, the things that he can do, that's a laundry list, right? I mean, he has everything you want. Arm strength is, while not, I wouldn't say it's 3+ signs, it's probably 2. It's really good. The accuracy is 3+ signs. It's phenomenal. The size, I mean, he's 6'6", 220. He's an exceptional athlete. We've seen him run the read option against Ohio State in the 2019 playoffs, running right at Chase Young and having success. We've seen him scramble, extend the play, and then he does have that arm talent to open the field up completely.
How do you see Trevor Lawrence and Urban Meyer working together?
Oh, it's beautiful. There's not a better fit. And I know the pick isn't official yet. I mean, it pretty much is, though. That
we're assuming Trevor it, Lawrence right.
Right? Trevor Lawrence was good enough to bring Urban Meyer out of a job at Fox where he was doing a great job on a big new kickoff, right? I mean, he had it made out there. And so to bring him out of retirement, get him finally in the NFL, that tells you how good Trevor Lawrence is and how good of a fit Coach Meyer thinks he is. So from my standpoint, I'm curious to see how Urban changes his offense for the NFL. But a lot of what we're seeing teams run, there's a lot of shades of Ohio State in there. So I think Trevor's ability to move is key, whether that's a designed RPO, whether that's just a rollout, whether it is some option, that's all there. And again, I can't highlight enough the running ability. And this is still a 220-pound frame that's going to fill out. He's only going to get stronger, and his arm's only going to get stronger. And already we see vision, instincts, and then just the mobility. The actual athleticism is phenomenal. So I think it is a perfect fit. I know a lot of people, when Urban first took the job, they wanted to say, oh, well, Justin Fields is this guy. Let's remember, they actually didn't overlap at Ohio State. Urban was gone about a month before Justin committed there. Obviously, there's, you know, some connection points, but Trevor Lawrence is the guy. I mean, he is the best fit of all the quarterbacks in this class for that offense.
We have so much time, 2 months until we get to the draft, more than 2 months. So we'll hear from Matt again. We'll talk to other draft picks and the mock drafters and everyone out there. But I like Matt because, A, he's a good story. Jumped into being a football evaluator pretty much just like that 10 years ago and has stood the test of time. So it's fun to hear from people that have a different perspective, and that's what we go for every week. So let's see, who's got a podcast coming up this week? I know, JP, you've got one with John and Bucky coming up later in the week.
That's on Wednesday, yeah. I know you guys have Drive Time on Tuesday, right?
Yeah, is there an Ozone podcast this week, John? Not so much. You're just
trying to work it out as we get moving forward with the assistant coaches plan to sort of lean on hopefully some of the coordinators and get some insight into what's going on that level.
All right. So this is the Jaguars Reporters. Thanks to JP and John and Ashlyn. We'll talk to you next week right here.